Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is December 16th, 2020, and this is episode 139, or is it, of transmission. Every once in a while, I accidentally miss a number, which, you know, I was telling Dan, like, I hope that we become such a cult classic someday that people start wondering what happened to episode 138, the missing episode.
The missing episode.
That's the robot birds episode.
Yes. You see, and this is how, like, scribal error turns into something significant.
So all of a sudden you got snake handling in the Gospel. Yeah. Not quite, but that was more willful, but still. Yes. Yeah.
Even it actually means nothing, but we could make it into something.
Yes.
Yes.
We could just someday just do episode 138, like 5 years from now, maybe long after we've stopped, we can just go back and just make it. It's kind of a nostalgia episode. Well, anyways, before we get too far afield, I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
Ceres, right out the gates, make an episode about robot birds. Another one. We have not, I don't think we've made a dedicated one. It's just they're a recurring theme.
Well, no, we did, you know, we did, like, early on, we did 5 or 6 episodes on conspiracy theories. And I think robot birds occupied most of one of them.
They got a lot of space, but I don't think there was an episode called episode 12,
no.
Robot Birds.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I mean, they deserve that level of respect, Dan.
They do. Or, you know, or it could be like when robot birds attack.
Yep.
Or, you know, do robot birds migrate? I mean, there could be a whole series, in fact. On that.
I just had an amazing thought. It just came into my head. Now. You know, we talk about the robot birds as maybe they're surveillance enemies, but maybe there's competing factions within the robot birds, kind of like the Transformers. And one of the good robot birds is the one who landed at the podium when Bernie Sanders was talking, trying to avert the coming crisis.
There you go. Well, I know that Ceres has captured and trained a robot bird that she keeps in her Patreon page. It's become digital. It used to be material, but now it's digital. So they're everywhere.
Oh my gosh. we could talk about robot birds as we have been known to do, ad infinitum, but we're not going to. We're going to talk about the precariat.
Yeah, I learned a new word today. I did not know this word.
Yeah, so I think Guy Standing is I think that's the dude. Like, sociologists and economists, some use this term. You know, if you talk to a classic Marxist, they're like, don't make up new class categories. That just is sloppy. But I find it helpful for describing at least this trend that we're seeing, which is a shift from more traditional workplaces and, like, industrial labor, where you have a somewhat static workforce. Now, if you're a worker, your life is always a little bit precarious because bosses can fire you. But there has been a sense of stability, like you go and work the factory job and then die. It's kind of stability. Not always great stability, but stability nonetheless. But now it's shifted to gig economies, right? So you pick up Uber work. You don't have this idea that you work for a company for long, and it's not even like you don't even stay within a field for long. It's just you hustle, you pick up things. And then as the internet has proliferated, anything that would consider cultural or creative output has become, even though that was always precarious too, it's become seen as something you should just do for free. Because how many sermons can you find online? How much music can you download for free? Every kind of creative output falls into this. So there's this great level of precarity, the precariat, that group of people who don't have any, like, social stability. And the funny thing about it that makes it even more disturbing is how easily we've lapped this up as somehow a good trend. The giving economy, the sharing economy, that's how we talk about this phenomenon. And then at the same time, we're like, at the same time, what we've seen is this influx of people encouraging minimalism as an aesthetic. If you notice this, like, somehow it's become trendy. It's de rigueur to like live in a tiny little home that looks just like a trailer home, but has real wood instead of simulated wood paneling on the inside. So like somehow you really want to work for Uber. You want that freedom and you want to live in a box. This is the good life, the precariat.
So yeah. So the term actually comes from combining two words, right? Precarious and proletariat.
Proletariat, the working class. Yeah. And the precarious working class.
Yeah, the precarious working class. And, you know, and we got to this episode because Mark and I were talking yesterday about a couple of different examples of this. And I was talking with Max and Sarah the other day, who did our brilliant Wonderful. Opening graphic music. you know, and so like, you know, they were saying what anybody in the musical field now knows, that literally nobody pays for music anymore, which is really pretty astounding if you think about it. You know, I'm old enough to remember records, and I remember when I was young, you know, your favorite band would put out a new record and you couldn't wait to go to the record store and buy a record. And if you wanted to hear the music, you had to buy the record. And, you know, then when tapes came along, there was this idea, well, you could tape a friend's album, but you had to have a lot of equipment for that. It wasn't very easy to do. And still somebody had to buy the record, right? Well, now nobody pays for music, which really does beg the question, how do musicians eat?
No, right? And it becomes like a weird knit, like the whole record thing is a fascinating one, because now you don't need a physical artifact unless you want it to be that, just that, an artifact. And so that's why people buy records again, and they've started repressing vinyl, because if you're going to have some random unnecessary artifact, it might as well be cool. It'd be like a vinyl, right? But otherwise, there's no need.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it's insubstantial, so it should be free. And like, and every artist, and including like, I'm lumping anyone who does sermons in this, and I know that might be a controversial mm-hmm. choice. I think we're all cultural workers at some level, and I basically speak to groups of people for education and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And, but everyone who's done anything like this knows that sometimes the only way you get paid is in exposure. Right. It's this other thing that somehow there's so much music and art that it's almost like garbage, like drifting through the streets. And that actually we're doing you a favor by focusing on you to cut through all the crap. That's the, that's how much we value your output.
Right. Yeah, and so the other example that Mark and I were talking about was spiritual direction, and then we were also talking about transmission. We're talking about this, and there is this idea within the church world that actually precedes the internet. This has been around for a while. That basically church stuff should be free.
Right? Yeah,
and you know, and I was given the example. I've helped to run a couple of church camps, and you know, you get this very weird phenomenon with church camps, right? That, you know, a given parent will easily plunk down $1,500 for a week of soccer camp. But then the church camp says, well, our week costs $250. And that same parent will go, well, why are you charging me $250 for a week of camp? It's church camp. That shouldn't cost anything. When, of course, the two things are exactly the same. You got a house, the kids, you got to feed them, you've got to hire staff to do stuff with them and keep them safe and, you know, all these things, right? But, and so what this brings up is something that we have talked about so much on this show, which is the issue of imagination and formation, right? That we have it in our minds that a certain set of things cost money. Mm-hmm. And a certain set of things do not. And that this is somehow like a law of nature, right? This just is the way that it is. And that's not true, There is no law of nature regarding money or what is a value and what is not a value. That is something that is organized by society and by those who have power in society. But then we, as the regular folks, we are socialized into those things. But then we don't even realize that, and then we take it as an absolute. And so we actually become part of the oppression, right? Like if we said to all of our wonderful listeners, in order to participate in transmission, it's going to cost as much as a cup of coffee, that people go and they spend $4 for a frappo latte, chocolatey
$4 thingy. What sort of like low-end coffee shop are you attending, Dan? Must be swill.
Right. If we said that, basically, the vast majority of you would disappear. Not out of malice, but simply out of habit, right? Simply out of habit. And so that's one of the things we wanted to spend a little time exploring.
And we're not being all boo-hoo, you're not giving us enough money. We're talking about this in a dispassionate way, in a sense, because this is the thing about so much of our economy. Like, I was telling Dan this the other day, like, I actually think the reason why, and particularly religion, the idea of talking about money becomes this fraught issue, because somehow deep in our bones, we're all socialists. Or at least, better yet, gift economists. I think we evolved in reciprocity, right? And so when we know something is sacred, we somehow instinctively get that the idea of a mediated exchange through currency taints it. And so, but instead of saying, look, we commodify all these lesser things, how do we then bring honor to those things that give us ultimate meaning? How do we support the things that make our lives beautiful? No, but instead what we do is say, oh, you're tainting it. How dare you get paid for spiritual direction? Or what I heard growing up is like, oh, being a pastor would be great. I'd love to get paid to sit around and have coffee with people all the time. Right. As though that's right. Like these sorts of things that are, they know that it should be about relationship. And I think art is kind of a similar thing. There's part of that, like the sense of art being sacred. Then another piece of it is what capitalism does, it turns things into commodities. And so you just see the artifact. You don't see the work behind it. So a sermon is a good example of this that I have experience with. So any good sermon takes a lot of hours, but you just show up and you talk for 20 minutes. So people think, well, how much is 20 minutes worth?
Right.
Because they don't understand how the sausage is made. Now, we don't think that way about plumbers, because we can visually see, like, oh my God, there's these metal tubes in the wall. I don't know how to get at those metal tubes in the wall. Right. That guy came in with his butt crack and ripped open the wall and then fixed the tube in the wall. And otherwise my house would have been all wet. Like, we understand, oh my gosh, this is complex and overwhelming, but someone talking about something for 20 minutes in an abstraction or creating a piece of art seems abstract. And so it creates this way where we devalue, we somehow think that a banker contributes more to society than an amazing artist. And I don't think that's true.
Got some great comments coming in.
I sorry about the butt crack comment. I was going for the stereotype about plumbers.
It's often very true, though. Mm-hmm. Having been a plumber myself, I've seen many of them.
hates the minimalism trend. I just wanted to highlight that. Yeah. There's something about, I don't mind minimalism as an aesthetic. There's some minimalism behind me. But right. The idea that it's sort of like, it's trendy, happening to happen at the same time when people are becoming poor, is suspicious.
Yeah. Well, and the fascinating thing about tiny houses, and a lot of people talk about, well, this has to do with climate change, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But, again, this gets subsumed into this entire capitalist structural way of thinking. One of the things that's fascinating to me about tiny houses is that on a per square foot basis, they're actually more expensive than regular houses right now, which shows you that there's something that's not quite minimalist about them. It's kind of a fascinating deal.
No. Susan writes, I do pay for music, vinyl albums. I don't even listen to records anymore, but I'll still buy them because I just love records. But I also did a Patti Smith concert recently, streamed on Veep for a ticket price. I've been curious about people going to concerts via stream. I haven't done it, but I've been wondering what that experience is like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, and part of what I would say, Susan, is that, and I do mean this in the nicest way, you see, you're a bit older. And so, you know, you and I come from, we all come from a time when, yeah, you know, paying for music was normal. And again, what, you know, when Max and Sarah talk about talking to all their friends and peers, and, you know, Max teaches in the college and he talks to college students. Yeah, not a single one of them. They've never grown up with that. They have no idea. They never pay for music.
Kathleen writes, I tried to quit my job as a pastor yesterday. My district superintendent was too busy. I guess so when I stop turning in any reports, someone will figure it out. I have always thought of my sermons as art. I mean, this is...
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
I mean, this church stuff is really complicated, you know, and sometimes maybe we could talk about ecclesiology. Because, like, I have an instinct towards, like, not respecting a line between clergy and laity, professional Christians and not. But at the same time, we live in a society where, like, it just so happens we expect a lot of church workers, and then church workers are among the worst paid professionals in the world. It feels like, it's just like crap. So I have a lot of frustration with how we want to have our cake and eat it too. And usually people who work in churches are treated like crap, including you, Kathleen. And to me, sermons are an art form. It's like a dying art form, but it's totally an art form.
Yep.
It's a type of prose. Ceres writes, I know that freelance work is more suited for me than 9-to-5, but I hate being put in a lose-lose position. I either had to devalue my work in order to make it affordable or make it inaccessible financially. At the same time, people tend to treat me like garbage and don't reciprocate with mutual aid and commitment if I don't monetize anything.
Right.
I totally resonate with all those words. And it's
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and that is the experiential expression of this world reality that we're talking about. And, you know, and we, especially if we live in urban areas, we are so far removed from the land that we really forget that all of this kind of goes back to that basic reality, right? That the things that we truly need, right? So, you know, food, water, clothing, shelter, the things that we truly need all come out of the land, the earth, one way or another. And so if you control that, right? And so controlling the means of production is not just controlling the factories, it's controlling the basic resources. If you control all of that, then at that point you can decide, okay, all of that is monetized, everything else is not. And so, you know, and this is, you know, I think about this a lot in terms of the sacred stuff, right? So the issue with the monastic tradition is that, right, they did not charge for spiritual things because they got a hold of, either through a grant from a monarch or because they went to some area that was essentially kind of stateless and abandoned, you know, they got a hold of a piece of property. And so they supported themselves with the work of their hands, as Benedict puts it, on this piece of property. And so, you know, they had what they needed. And then, of course, their art and their prayer and all of that was then just a part of the outgrowth of how they lived, and they were essentially being paid to do that work because they were living on a farm that supported them, which they also worked on. And so as soon as you disconnect from the rest of creation, you now have this setup where the people that do control creation have the power to decide all of what is getting monetized and not monetized. But then, as I said, we become brainwashed into that system as if it's some objective reality law of nature, which it's not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to make a plug, you know, Dan and I both talk about this sort of phenomenon a lot. I have a class I've done in the past, hopefully I'll do in the future again, called The Spirituality of Empire. But this is condition of rootlessness that, like, Simone Weil, who's one of my heroes, talks about. Like, we start becoming increasingly abstracted, and then we normalize it. And, you know, capital, we act as though feudalism is, like, such a long-lost thing. Feudalism was crappy because you had monarchs, like, who owned everything, kind of, noble people. But they still had this idea of the commons for peasants. We don't even have that, but we still have... I'm watching this anime with my son that's centered around Professor Moriarty as the good guy. And he's trying to kill off corrupt noblemen. And the whole premise is, like, everything is controlled by 3% and how it's that the world is, like, unfair. And I'm like, wow, the good old days. They had 3% of people controlling everything instead of just one. But we still have that same essential logic of there's this, we don't call it divine right of kings. We call it property rights that's passed on in perpetuity through bloodlines. And it's the same kind of thing. And we somehow allow that shared fiction dominate our way of thinking about things to the point where if your job is replaced with a robot or a scanning system and you can't get work and you die, it's your own fault.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, to your point, I mean, if you look at the history of England in the 16th and 17th, century, when they closed the commons,
it was such a bad thing.
Like, millions of people starved to death.
Well, they also, at the same time, they made it illegal to be a vagabond.
Yeah. And so it was a complete social nightmare, but it was essentially all about getting people into factory labor and monetized labor.
Yes.
And also because, you know, the ruling class just wanted more land for themselves. All right. We better start breezing through the comments. We're going to be in a crunch time here.
Guest writes Cory Doctorow. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. A sci-fi writer who makes a lot of his work free. Talks about how all artists are in a difficult place because they are in a medium where some people will do this thing for free. Fanfic, art therapy, etc. The market is massively flooded. This wouldn't be so bad if everyone's basic needs could be met. Think about the creative output that would happen and the innovation if people didn't have to worry about starvation or housing or healthcare. And then this surplus flooding stuff could be like, it wouldn't be a big deal because all of a sudden some other musician who depends on their art to eat wouldn't have to suffer.
Yeah, but I also think we need to look very carefully even at the construction of those sentences and that analysis. I mean, our society is flooded by coffee, right? Yes. Our society is flooded by 2x4s. Our society is flooded by lawnmowers.
That's true.
Nobody says, oh, because you can get a 2x4 in 27 different places in town, they should be free. Right? I mean, they're not free, but you can get them anywhere.
Good point. Because it's still supply and demand logic that's flawed at a fundamental
level. Well, and it's controlled, right? Yeah. It's controlled. And so the reason that the market is flooded by free stuff is simply because the structure allows for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, it is there's this created container for allowing all kinds of things to be free. And then for people in their own mind to think, well, I want to make art, I like doing that. Well, the only choice that I have is to do it for free. But that's something that we've been indoctrinated into.
Yeah. Well, and we have this, and it's partly because we have an exchange system. Like, I don't want to go back to the idea of patronage, but the logic of patronage was if you're offering something, then a person with means would notice it. And then because they saw it as a benefit to society, would pay you to do it, right? That's not better, but it's a different logic. societally, you have cultures that were more gift economies. They'd recognize someone as more of a sage figure, and that person would just be freed up to do that because they saw it as legitimate work that was special and different. And they didn't have to justify it in a market exchange system. So, you know, this sort of different way of thinking, like we don't need to go back to some previous way, but the fact there have been various different previous ways shows that we can think of a different one now. Like we can provide for one another without it having to be through some sort of market exchange system that's controlled by corporations and blah, blah, blah. Jeremy brings up a good point here. I'm all for artists getting paid. I do differentiate church activities because I cannot see church becoming a fee for service kind of thing. But I do think people need to consider how they support the clergy that they learn from. I'm not sure what the right answer is. And when you start talking about ecclesiology, it gets very difficult because there's all these competing values at play.
Right. And to me, it gets back to, I mean, whether you call it fee for service or whatever, it gets back to, Mark, what you just said is that, you know, and this is very biblical, right? So the Levites, as one of the tribes of Israel, was not supposed to work the land. So they were disconnected from a piece of property. And so it was recognized that therefore they could not feed themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they were supposed to attend to religious work and the other tribes were supposed to feed them. Right? And so it really does get back to this issue of if our basic needs are met, then suddenly you free people up to do all kinds of what we might call more vocational things. Right, things that are life-giving for us. But when we're in this precarious, anxiety-driven situation where we know that our basic needs are not going to be met, now you get all of these very strange, out-of-whack behaviors. All right, let's keep going.
Jim asks, where do I send my check to you? Your address, Dan? Or what?
Jim, you could message either one of us on Facebook and we'll give you an address, or you could go to the MICA website and there's a place to pay by credit card or PayPal.
Is there an address on the MICA website?
No.
Okay, so micapraise.org. Or message Dan or me. I have a vague sense that maybe you've messaged me and I didn't respond. If that's true, I'm sorry, and I'll look through that. But if you haven't, just message one of us. I've been behind in my messaging. Sirius writes, and we respect free stuff more if it comes from an abuser, oppressor, and codependent than from someone who just makes and shares products and service from abundance and fulfillment.
Yeah, and that's a whole other can of worms right there.
I'm assuming this ties into plumbers, butt crackers.
Yes, butt crackers.
This sounds like a really bad product that you buy at a grocery store. Mark, who did the art behind you? I bought this somewhere online, and these are prints from a Chinese Christian artist. But these ones right of this kind of the sun, I did those just to kind of fill space. Geno or Gino, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. I apologize. I do have a question regarding religion and money. We should talk maybe about religion and money particularly, even more, Dan. I get what you're saying. However, my gut reaction comes from my upbringing in abject poverty. Charging by the church told us the poor are not welcome. This is the tension. I agree with Jeremy. Personally, I don't like fee for service. The fact that I ask for compensation for spiritual direction causes me some anxiety to begin with. The fact that sometimes people get angry because they think that me spending 4 years in school after seminary to learn to be a spiritual director, that I shouldn't get compensated. It's like, I agree that individuals shouldn't have to pay money in exchange for spiritual stuff. I also agree that people who commit to spiritual work as a type of cultural work need to have a way to live. And we live in a capitalist system, so it has to come from somewhere. People are tithing less. The church is less socially important to a lot of people. And so we're in a difficult time. So, and the fact that churches just don't talk about money well at all makes it all worse. It's a source of pain and anxiety. So I think church should be freely available to all. And I think it's also okay for churches to say, we need money, please donate, and not be shamed for having to do that. So that's my basic statement on that. Catherine writes, I sew and knit some of my own clothes, and it is wild to understand how little we often pay for machine-made garments compared to how much human skill and time goes into textile making, dyeing, cutting, sewing, and finishing. All that labor is virtually invisible to most Americans. But only two generations ago, my grandmothers made a lot of their kids' clothing. It's astonishing, like, how much it costs. I've made some of my own clothes, and it's super damn expensive.
Yeah, and again, this has to do with the connection to land, the way the capital operates, right? I mean, the idea that you can pay 99 cents for a piece of clothing that got made in China out of some oil extruded plastic, there's something wrong there. There's just something wrong.
And then we start expecting 99-cent shirts, even though we're underpaying. Like, we should pay the real cost for things.
Yeah.
Thomas writes, this has been something that I struggled with doing education and youth ministry. I was told many times that if it was truly my calling, God would provide a way. F that S. Right. I've heard that my whole life too. And, you know, don't muzzle an ox.
Yeah.
No one should get rich off of the church, but people should be able to make a living. If it's something that the church is asking or requiring or creating space for, then people should have a way to live. This should not be a controversial statement.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
God has provided a way. You just refuse to open your wallet.
Yeah.
Boom. There's a mic drop. I don't want to drop my real mic in front of me because it'd be loud. Susan writes, the musicians that I follow who have been successful in pivoting to pandemic times have done free Zoom or Instagram Live to build relationships, then made albums and offer to pay online streaming concerts along with selling merch. The combination seems to be a successful model.
We don't really have time to talk about that. Some people can do it successfully. For some people, it's really, really hard.
Karen writes, isn't work a social construct? Don't we already have enough housing for everyone? Isn't money made up? I mean, what's wrong with us that we can't meet everyone's needs? I think work, there's a noble sense of the word work where we all have a work to do. We all create things for the betterment, not of just ourselves, but for our communities. The idea of a job that you have to go into in exchange for that, I mean, depending on how we slice and dice the words, that's totally a construct.
Yeah, I mean, work, if you just define basic work as activity you need to do to survive, that's not a social construct. That is an actual thing. But how society defines that and the systems and boundaries that it creates on that, that's exactly what we're talking about. It's all a social construct. And right, what's wrong with us that we can't meet everyone's needs is that we don't get that that's a good idea, right? As Mark said, the fact that we have to be arguing about, you know, is it okay that a robot takes your job and you starve to death indicates that there's something seriously wrong with us. And that is absolutely true.
Becca writes, I like to think of churches like co-ops. You buy in and then you make decisions. Imagine what difference it would be if in order to make decisions about community assets, you need to contribute to them. I mean, I think there has to be different ways of doing buy-in because the earlier point about it being economically prohibitive for people without income, but still, like, I definitely think the predominant ways of doing church are flawed in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have thoughts on UBI? Yes. We don't have time to get into that one too much.
Well, yeah, but that's a lot of what we're talking about, right? So, I mean, all that universal basic income means is that society makes a commitment to meet everybody's basic needs, right? And this is one of the things that people don't really understand about the economics in scripture. I mean, the Bible does not say that everybody should be a billionaire. And the Bible also doesn't say that there shouldn't be billionaires. What the Bible is very clear about, however, is that no matter whether they're billionaires or not, everybody's basic needs are met. And that is the standard for the just society. And so right. I mean, this idea of basic income, i.e. basic support. I mean, if we need these pieces of paper and electronic, you know, things whizzing around to pay for food and everything, fine. Then, yeah, everybody's got to get enough of those so that there is a basic level of security and human decency, so that then people can, you know, breathe and look around and think and go, okay, well, what else do I want to do? Absolutely.
Yeah, I like the idea of a UBI. I think there are good ways and not good ways to go about it, which could be a whole other topic. But the idea that everyone's basic needs should be met, it shouldn't be controversial at all. Adam writes, it's unfair to say this thing is happening because people will do it for free when people give away their art just so it can be experienced. There's something, I don't know, like there's something really dehumanizing about this whole thing too.
Right.
Like, because, you know, I have a lot of anxiety and trauma kinds of issues that make this worse. But the fact that our society judges things based on its contribution to an economic system that is therefore reflected by how much you're paid. So your worth is tied up in money explicitly in our system. And then you're trying to create stuff that can get that kind of monetary response. It really taints how you create things. Because then you're starting to think, like, it's called the hustle. You start worrying about the hustle rather than what you think is a good creation. And then you start determining your wealth based on whether or not people will pay you. There's so much messed up with it. And it really stifles, like, the beautiful things that people can create and the joy in which with which they create them.
Jim, all right, so
some free artist residencies. Oh, wow.
So we're way past time with a lot of comments. And
when do you want to drop the hammer, Dan? Well, there are lots of ways in which artists currently have to pay their own to have their own work shown, for example, on social media platforms that hide my music post even from friends and family unless I pay for ads. Yes, the algorithm is shitty that way. Gus writes, a couple years ago, Wu-Tang put out an album and sold only one copy. They talked about how monarchs used to commission art because they understand no one pays for music. There was a Kickstarter to bid for the album. They lost to Martin Scorsese, but man, I wanted them to win. Yeah, I remember that Scorsese thing. Adam writes, so there's also this thing that our culture views art as such, that there is this deep-seated taking for granted of artists.
Yeah, and there was a good article very recently about this, about how art is work. I think, Catherine, you may have even shared that. And again, how, you know, this is a new idea, right? This idea of, you know, the starving artist, and like the more you're starving, the better your art, and that's actually a new concept, right? In the Middle Ages, that concept didn't exist, and art was considered work, right? It was much more like the way we maybe talk about trade and those plumbers. And, you know, of course, artists were expected to get paid. And sort of a ridiculous notion, like you should do all this great work and starve for it, and that's somehow noble.
I'm going to jump to this one because so to hell with the poor, got it? Nothing I said was to hell with the poor.
No.
So I want you to think back, go rewatch.
Yeah, rewatch. I think you're sort of confused.
Me saying that people should get paid for work is not saying to hell with the poor.
No.
And I'm kind of offended that you'd accuse me of that. So.
No.
If you want to share poverty stories. It's hard to find the place to donate on Mike Appraise for me. I guess I need to look more closely.
That's one thing about the website. It's underneath the, I think, participate drop-down menu. Our new website put it in a bad place.
I'll try to find a way to like highlight ways to give, because we don't want to make it hard for people, that's for sure. I made a choice to not make my writing and healing work for free, hence making my Patreon startup. I am also working on creating a system of community care for myself and a community to make meeting needs easier. There's just so many comments here. Let's just blaze through. We need a new movement. There was an anti-precarity movement in Spain. Adam writes, and while people accept the ubiquity and invasiveness of popular culture and marketing, they frown upon independent artists that they know in many cases. They have the gall to share their work with them via DM or flood their timeline.
Right.
And then there are a lot of privilege. There's a lot of privilege for artists who have access to or are palatable to communities with money, not to mention the manufactured desire for art to be clean, polished, well-produced. That all takes money as well as time, not fighting for survival. The fact that they're using the language of staying hungry is super fucked up. And then, Boris, anyone know why I don't see all comments in my stream? This is being streamed in like four or five different spots and each have their own threads and it doesn't bring them all together. So we get most of them here, although sometimes things fall through the crack and we try to cover every comment here. So if you're not seeing them there, it's just the limits of the platform. And we wanted to make this accessible to our different streams. So with that, we're way past time.
Yep. So thanks a lot. This is obviously a hot topic on all kinds of levels. And and figuring out, you know, how to essentially work together. Because again, you know, I use the spiritual community model, you know, how do you work together to sort of marshal enough resources while also advocating for this on a much bigger, broader level that none of us have much power over. How do you work together to marshal enough resources to share, right? And so, okay, if society says we're gonna pay one vocation a lot more, one vocation a lot less, well, if those two people work together, there's no law against them sharing their stuff.
To me, that's where churches can be a beautiful thing, where we try to live out from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs without.
And again, and once you start trying to do that, though, that's when you bump up into all your own internal stuff, right? And people are suddenly like, oh, I feel bad asking for money. I feel guilty that I'm not making it. The other person's like, well, this person should work harder, right? And so that's the spiritual practice of this. Is noticing that formation that we've all absorbed and working to hear a different voice.
Well, all right. Hopefully we'll talk more about economics in the future. I'm sure we will. So
see you tomorrow for episode 793.
We're going to skip a bunch of numbers.
Skip a lot of numbers.
See ya.
Bye.